There are three questions that we've been reflecting on in the depths of the age of austerity as life on the red line has begun and developed. They're questions about what it means to be the church, to be a community of faith during the age of austerity. Firstly, as you can see, how can the church foster a sense of the common good in the face of systemic injustice and unequal suffering? Is the common good good enough, in other words, in the face of systemic and structural injustice? Secondly, in spite of the fact that many churches, not all by all means, but many churches have seen a decline in the numbers of people attending worship, it remains the case that churches are often one of the key, if not the key, player in a local community because of their enduring social capital in local neighbourhoods, villages, towns, estates and cities. So given their enduring social capital, what role does the church play, and what role perhaps should the church play in the plural public sphere of the 21st century? And then thirdly, is the concept, as I hinted a moment ago, of the common good a fairly widespread but arguably fairly opaque and vague concept? Is the concept of the common good radical enough to challenge structural and cultural violence of poverty? So those the three questions, and in light of those three questions, we've begun to identify several different approaches, different responses that Christians have made. So firstly, if we could have the next slide, please, we've got what we're calling the caring response. But before we come to those responses, we do need to recognize that there is no kind of easy fit, no one size fits all. Martin Luther King, in the year before he died, described poverty as an octopus, something with many different tentacles. Leonie Sandercott, the urban studies specialist, suggested, like Iris Marion Young, that poverty has and oppression has many different faces. For Kenneth Leech, the Anglican urban theologian, poverty wreaks existential damage. So poverty is many-sided, multidimensional, multifaceted, even though in the UK we often, it seems to me, focus on food poverty, which, important as it is not the whole picture when it comes to thinking about poverty. So if we're going to grapple with this octopus, we need, it seems to us, in Life on the Breadline, to develop an intersectional, political, practical and theological response. But because life is messy and because we all change and because life moves on, any sense of trying to develop a rigid typology of Christian social action on poverty is mistaken. So there are three broad Christian traditions that we have begun to explore in Life on the Breadline. And I'd like to talk briefly about each of those in turn. So if we could move now, having given you a cue a few moments ago, if we can move now to the caring response. The caring response, and I stress again that these are fluid Christian traditions that merge and diverge as time passes. But the caring tradition of Christian social action and Christian action on poverty is probably the dominant tradition. It's a tradition that's shaped by an ethic of welfare and charity and common good, an ethic of social responsibility and loving my neighbour, stimulated in the 19th and early 20th centuries by Catholic social teaching that we see first emerging in Rerum Novarum, and in the social gospel of Walter Rauschenbusch in the United States. Now, those two strands of Christian theology are maybe not often name-checked, but they are in the background in relation to caring responses to poverty. Within this approach, we see the church modelling God's solidarity with humanity and God's preferential option for the poor. Justin Welby, just the last amongst a long line of Anglican church leaders, perhaps going back to William Temple in the midst of the Second World War and at the birth of the welfare state. Justin Welby, much more recently, with regards to austerity, has suggested that austerity is, quote, a theory for the rich and a daily reality for the poor. So what do we see? Where do we see these caring responses? Well, we see them in food banks, in soup runs, in lunch clubs, in food pantries. But as with a number of forms of Christian social action, it's not simply the case that any form of Christian social action is exclusively a caring or a campaigning model of social action, because with food banks, for example, the Trustful Trust, we see moving and shifting from what we might have referred to as a caring approach to more of an advocacy approach. But nevertheless, these are some examples of caring. So the caring response to poverty is very person-centered, but arguably can create dependency and diminish agency. So if that's a caring snapshot of caring responses, what do the campaigning responses look like? Well, let me just briefly summarize those. The inheritor of an ancient but marginalized radical Christian ecclesiological and theological tradition, we see, for example, in the work of the early Franciscans, the Diggers, Victorian Christian socialists, early trades unionists, worker priests, and in the 20th century within Latin American liberation theology and theologies of liberation across the world. Campaigning approaches, again, focusing very much on God's preferential option for the poor, but are focused very much on structural injustice, or what Gustavo Gutierrez refers to as systemic sin. Here, perhaps unlike the caring approach, we have an ecclesiology of solidarity. So we're talking here of a church of the poor rather than a church for the poor. Pope Francis in recent years has written on this, and our colleagues in Project Partners in Church Action on Poverty are working very much on this notion of a church on the margins. Campaigning approaches, very much focused on social justice as opposed to social responsibility. But does this focus on systems depersonalize austerity? We see examples, of the campaigning approach to Christian action on poverty in housing justice, not least churches' responses to the Grenfell Tower tragedy 3 years ago, just over 3 years ago now. Church involvement with campaigns for a living wage and the involvement of churches in community organizing networks. And last but not least, the third approach that we're looking at is often referred to as prosperity gospel. Now, this might seem a little bit counterintuitive. The first two responses that we've looked at and are exploring in Life on the Breadline are broadly similar. They are built and premised on the understanding of a Christian gospel that calls followers of Jesus, calls the church to campaign, to struggle, to end poverty, to challenge injustice. A prosperity approach to austerity is quite different, but within Life on the Breadline, we're trying to reflect the Christian approaches to austerity that we are finding in the UK. And hand on heart, I think if we ignored the prosperity gospel approach to austerity, we would only be providing part of the picture. This wouldn't be the whole picture. So what do prosperity approaches suggest to us? Well, firstly, they very much paint the church as the ark of the saved. The church is a place of uplift and empowerment, of physical and material blessing. prosperity approaches to austerity, which have taken root in the UK, emerged from the earlier 20th century world of faith movement in the United States, focusing around tithing and positive confession. So I name something to God, and in the faith that God will give that to me and will bless me with it. But also prayer and giving. Faith is seen, according to Robert Beckford, as a gateway to financial blessing. I think Robert has referred to prosperity, which suggests that faith is a bank for the people of God, and wealth a sign of God's blessing. So we see this approach gaining traction in the UK, not least in the work of churches such as SPAC Nation and Kingsway International Christian Centre in London. Wealth creation, not God's option for the poor, represents the cure for UK poverty. So finally, let's just highlight what some of the challenges of this picture might be as we begin to think about theology. What does the enduring poverty that we've seen unleashed during the age of austerity, what do Christian responses to poverty that we've uncovered during Life on the Breadline, what questions do they pose? What challenges do they pose for political theology? Well, we've identified four to reflect on this morning. Firstly, the suggestion that Christian theology and the church needs to negotiate a new place on an increasingly plural cultural landscape. Secondly, there's a challenge to develop an intersectional political theology. You remember I spoke about poverty as an octopus, or oppression as having many different faces. Arguably, political theology, whilst grappling with poverty and austerity, has not grappled with the intersectional, the multidimensional nature of poverty. There's a challenge for us all. Thirdly, we need to forge a theology that addresses the pastoral importance of short-term need and the prophetic need for long-term change. And then finally, moving away from structures, we need to defeat the hegemonic cultural violence that underpins and justifies structural injustice, inequality and poverty, the skivers that George Osborne once infamously referred to when he was Chancellor of the Exchequer. Only in so doing then can we begin to address the relational and existential poverty that runs beneath the poverty that stalks the UK as the age of austerity continues to rumble on. That's almost all from us now, but you will see from the final slide that there is a lot more to come from Life on the Breadline. We're entering now the final year of our project and completing our case studies and interviews, hopefully by Christmas. Lots of things to emerge during the next 12 months, reports and CPD, several short films, a MOOC, an exhibition, which will be at Coventry Cathedral, photographic exhibition, and a conference again this time next year to conclude the project, together with journal papers and a book.